Hello everyone and welcome to The Sydneyist, a weekly conversation about the city we love. I'm Elizabeth Farrelly and we're broadcasting from the Alan Slate studio at Eastside Radio on 89.7 FM or streaming on eastsidefm.org. Tonight we're asking whether it's still possible to live and work as an artist in Sydney. As rents, house prices and living costs just rise and rise and rise, and while payments and fees for artists are more likely to fall over time, creatives are being squeezed out. They're not the only people being squeezed out of Sydney. Young people and poor people are in much the same boat, broadly speaking. But we want to look specifically at the creative life, partly because it's not often talked about, and partly because as creative people, artists, musicians, poets, writers, actors get moved out further from the city centre, you can imagine that geometrically it means that they're also more dispersed. They might go and live in the far suburbs, they might go to small regional towns, but either way they're less likely, probably, to be rubbing shoulders with other creatives. And often it's that rubbing shoulders, that frisson, that generates a creative culture, which is why inner cities have traditionally been the creative hubs of civilizations. So today we're talking with three creatives, artist Peter Bainbridge, actor Kate Mannix, and writer Mark Mordieu. Each one of these people is talented and accomplished in their own right. Each has been working as an artist in Sydney for much of a lifetime, some decades, and each has watched Sydney change and felt the change reflected in their own lives and how they survive in what is all too often a subsistence lifestyle. I asked each of the three what it has been like for them living and working as an artist in Sydney. First, I asked Peter Bainbridge, a very accomplished and revered, I might say, silkscreen artist and printmaker who arrived in Sydney from the 1980s and whose work since then has been bought and now appears in the collections of many galleries, including the National Gallery in Canberra. What was Sydney like then for artists?
Well, my partner Rose Borg, she'd been here several times. I'd never been here. I'd been to Europe prior to Sydney. I get to Sydney and I thought, what the hell was I thinking going to Europe? Sydney is just mind-blowing.
Yes.
I could not believe. And then we got to the harbour and it was all those little, you know, ferries and it was a working harbour, and
it was fabulous,
bees were everywhere.
Yeah.
And Darlinghurst was just, you know, the icing on the cake. There was studios and artists everywhere. There was cheap housing.
Mm.
And then the capital gains, that went on for about 10 years. And it started
until the
late 90s.
Mm.
And then at around 2000, what happened was that capital gains tax was introduced and artists were literally kicked out of this glorious cultural city overnight, and it hasn't recovered. We've had another $100 increase in the last 12 months in this little tiny California bungalow place, which is like an oven in the summer and a fridge in the winter.
Yes.
A glorious place. But we've got a printing area out the back, double garage. It's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
But we can't sell from there. You know, there's no little shop front windows.
Mark Mordieu is a highly respected journalist, writer and poet. He's the founder of the Addy Road Writers Festival in Marrickville and author of the best-selling and award-winning biography of Nick Cave, Boy on Fire. He's also, for anybody who's desperate for the next volume to come out, currently working on volume 2 of that, although he says it might be some time away. What is it like having to earn a living as a writer in a city like Sydney?
Well, the answer to that question is probably pretty obvious to a lot of people.
It's to any writers, certainly.
Certainly to any writers, and that's very tough. I mean, a writer is like really any kind of contractor. And no matter how talented you are, no matter what kind of name you've got, you're not always able to drive your own boat or car, whatever the metaphor might be. You can get knocked off just by the state of the industry, and suddenly you've got no work. And you know, in the last two decades, but certainly in the last decade, the media in particular has been in a spin. You know, we hear lots of stories about journalists being laid off left, right and centre, about large legacy media organisations not only laying off people but paying less than what they were paying people 20 years ago.
Yeah, that happened to me, yeah.
Exactly. So you're being offered less money than 20 years ago, and 20 years ago you felt you were being ripped off or underpaid.
Absolutely.
So that starts to look a little bit grim, particularly if you're older and you feel you're established and you have some sort of brand or name. So the whole kind of compound kind of conspires against you, and it's particularly hell, obviously, if you've got a family or some sort of partnership or kids to support. I'm a writer and journalist. The truth of the matter is that I would probably keep doing it for nothing and in the
and just starve.
Well, I don't want to starve, and I need money. But actually, you know, being really truthful, half the time now I am doing it for nothing. I'm putting things online. I'm still producing. But the question of where to put that material and who I can freelance to is problematic.
And now we go to Kate Mannix, an actor and singer who has held lead roles in the West End of London, but has become, in Sydney, a staunch, if unpaid, believer in Sydney's thriving community theatre scene, and will soon appear in Two Ladies and an Emu at Theatre on Chester in Epping. First of all, welcome and thank you for being here. But also, can you tell us about your experience of what it's like to be an actor in small local theatre in Sydney?
It's wonderful to be an actor in small local theatre in Sydney. In fact, often it's more enjoyable than it is being in the big companies, because often we get to do more interesting, original work. We're not, you know, a lot of professional things that are going on at the minute would be tribute shows. So those are,
yes.
Often you can get that sort of thing happening, say, in Glen Street a lot, the ensemble, things like that. But so in the small local theatres, it is, we have a very good time. It's a very community-oriented activity. So we enjoy ourselves a great deal. Of course, it is not profitable.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? Because it relies then on people who are able to do it for nothing or almost nothing. Is that right?
Yes.
So everybody, it seems to me that there is therefore a sort of divide between the people who are paid and taken seriously as professionals and all of the rest who, despite producing high quality work, are often not paid and therefore not highly respected. Is that right?
It is and it isn't. Mm. It is largely like that. But then in this city, other models have developed. So, for instance, Packerman, the Neil Gooding organisation, that is both professional and amateur.
Ooh.
So he puts on musicals, largely at the Riverside and Parramatta, and he will have hire professionals to play the primary roles, and then he will audition from the community sector for his chorus.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And they're not paid, those
and
people?
And they are not paid, no.
And what do we think about that? Is that a good way of helping people in, or is it a terrible inequity?
Well, bloody actors, you know. Bloody actors just want to work.
Yeah,
they just want to work. And they, and they hope they'll get picked up by somebody. Mm. And, of course, it doesn't work like that at all.
No. It's very unfair, actually, in the end, isn't it? Because you end up being essentially an apprentice forever.
Yes, that's right.
Kills at me, and it must be hard, but you upset.
Oh yeah, I like that.
I'm the girl at the party, mascara streaks in a little black dress. You think you're happy with your shiny new friends, but they won't be right where I am in the end. Now all you is are coming in letters and cards. You buy tickets and main man, it must be hard, but you never were. You never were a good ride. And you know you can strip it back to basics. Stop dressing your blame up. Am I crazy? But I can't expect with your limited vocabulary. You wouldn't know, you wouldn't know, you wouldn't know how to give an apology. Now all you words are coming in letters and cards. You pause, you get to me, it must be hard.
That was Hayley Marston with a track called Good Writer from an album also called Hayley Marston from 2023. I'm Elizabeth Farrelly, here with you on the Sydneyist at Eastside Radio 89.7 FM or streaming on eastsidefm.org. I'm speaking here with three creatives, three accomplished and talented Sydneysiders, about the gradual and increasing impoverishment of artists trying to survive in Sydney and the flow-on effect for Sydney's cultural scene. I asked Kate Mannix, a staunch advocate of the quality of community acting in Sydney, about the divide between the paid professional world and the unpaid amateur world of community theatre, and the effect of this on what you might think of as the breeding ground, the seagrass, if you like, of professional theatre in Sydney, which is how community theatre works by nurturing talent.
If you go outside the CBD, you'll find there is nothing that's professional in the sense of the actors being paid.
Mm.
And yet there'll be much that's going on all year, all the time. You know, in Miranda, in Engadine, in Willoughby, in Chatswood.
So how do they survive, those theatre groups? How do they – they must be charging for tickets, I suppose.
They charge for tickets.
Because they're having to pay for theatres, presumably.
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, I was doing a little bit of research onto this, and the marvellous Willoughby Theatre Company that largely does musicals, a couple of years ago they put on a stellar production of Mary Poppins.
Mm.
Well, they were charged over $100,000.
For the theatre?
For 15 shows.
Whoa. For like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Heavens. How do they do that?
Pays? I believe they were left some money some years ago, and I think that they've invested it, and they're an unusual group.
Mm, mm.
I think they do have a bit of a bank account, but it relies on the ticket sales. But of course, there's a limit to what you can charge. Now they're charging about $70,
which is quite a lot.
They have the benefit of having a theatre there in the concourse that has a proper number of seats in the house, about 500. Now, if you look at almost any other theatre around town, whether it's professional or amateur, you'll have 100 seats.
Mm.
And 50 in fact, seats.
Of course, as a theatre goer, I love those little places, like the new theatre in Newtown, which is tiny, and those little black boxes which have almost no seats. And so you get this very intimate performance, but I cannot imagine how they can make it stack up for themselves.
They can't. They can't.
So nobody gets paid. They have to pay an enormous amount. I don't know about that theatre, but in general for those small theatres.
See, and that's the bit, if I can just have my little rant here, that's the bit that bugs me. In the old days, councils used they understood, as they did with the local bolo or with the footy or with the, you know, any little heritage-y thing going on. Mm. They understood that it was a community group putting on a community service and that community service benefited the community. And so they would give them a community rate.
Yes.
That doesn't happen anymore. Actually, that's not quite true. Bayside Council does.
Mm.
Bayside Council's very good. Their groups are the Rockdale Opera, Rockdale Musical Society, and the Regals, another theatre group, and they are very well supported by their council. But that's the only one that I know of.
The sacred cow, songwriter in a cover town. You paid your money just to get ahead. Cafe corner and a single bed. What she loved you for, she hates it now. Songwriter in a cover town. No, she never says anything. No, she never says. Found a photo of a wedding gown. You try to find her, but she's not around. Songwriter in a cover town.
That was the Bob Corbett Band with a track called Songwriter in a Cover Town. It sounds like the story of my life. From an album called Revolution, 2015. I asked writer Mark Mordieu about Sydney's future and what it might be like to live in a city without artists. What will Sydney be like if this sort of starving out of the artists continues?
Well, it's already having an incredibly negative effect, but particularly since COVID, obviously, on the sort of live music scene and on the lives of musicians. And yet, in situations like COVID, in other types of larger kind of traumas, you know, flood and fire, these kind of things, we look to music, we look to writers, we look to art to sort of console us, to inspire us, to keep us going.
Yeah.
But the city itself, I think my impression of what's going on with Sydney at the moment with all the artists that I know is a lot of them are trying to literally evacuate and leave town.
Mm.
If they can. A lot of people can't afford to move. Yeah, a lot of people have family attachments. if they move, where to? I mean, the sort of cancer of real estate greed in Sydney has corrupted really the entire country. So even if you were to move out into the burbs more or out to another sort of city or region, you don't necessarily save that much, and it costs you a lot of money to do that, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. So you'd, most artists simply don't have the resources of time, physical energy, and money saved to be able to go anywhere. So it's, to me, it's like boiling frog syndrome. So people keep trying to hang on, and then the whole thing kind of snaps. Yeah, there's this thing, boiling frog syndrome, where things steadily get worse and worse. The rent sort of climbs up. You keep trying to hang on, and then breaking point is reached. And I feel scared for my friends. I feel scared for myself. I know I can think of at least one person who's had a number one hit in the country and is basically couch surfing. I can think of quite well-known writers who are living in terror of how to hold on to the houses or places where they live. You know, like you get mental disintegration going on. And culturally for the city itself, I just think this means that, you know, the artists are obviously pushed out in the same way that nurses, doctors, teachers are. It means the city becomes less vibrant and more colourless, except for things being imported in at a kind of higher end by the larger festivals. I mean, there's a kind of long-term attrition that I think begins to occur as well. I mean, you could use a sports metaphor where, you know, 10 years from now you suddenly find that you don't really have an arts and culture scene of any substance.
And now we go to Kate Mannix, an actor and singer, a staunch, if unpaid, believer in Sydney's thriving community theatre scene. You might expect that, as with sport, for example, that you have those sort of amateur groups which are regarded as sort of feeder grounds for the professional. But does that kind of thing happen in theatre, as you would hope?
No, you know, it doesn't. Mm. This is a very cliquey town. It always has been. My dear late husband used to say, the Americans are really good about this. You know, I used to say, how was it that Phil Noyce got to go from Rabbit Proof Fence to doing all of his Patriot Games, great big commercial films? And George said it was because the Americans are great. They really like talent. They look for it. They send people out and about to find it.
Yeah.
And they saw that film and they thought, he's got the juice. Let's grab him. Let's take him away.
No, we don't do that.
We don't do that. We do not do that.
Isn't that strange?
So we've got strange, what we do have is sort of strange connections that no one can really follow. So I'm sorry about this, Darlinghurst Theatre. I really do love you, but I'm just going to have to bag you out. Darlinghurst Theatre Group used to be, like all of the rest of us, a community theatre. They were based at the Hayes, what is now the Hayes, called something else. Sydney City Council decided that they wanted to renovate the old tabernacle on Burton Street.
Yeah.
And they asked the Darlinghurst Group to come and be the group there, and they advised them. Once it was built, they were given use of the building for a peppercorn rent.
Wow.
And that allowed them to go professional.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they didn't have substantial amount of rent anymore.
Yes. And now do they pay higher rent than that? Do we know?
Well, they are paying a higher rent. I believe that has actually increased, but it's still 63% of the market rate for that building. Mm.
Which is a big leg up.
It's a big leg up. Mm. And I've never seen it go out for tender, that building, and I'm not sure why that is.
Perhaps that's a question we should ask. So just back to actors themselves for a minute. I understand what you say about there being paid and unpaid actors, but so the paid people get paid at least what the union demands, presumably, and everybody else gets nothing. And that just seems really tough. I mean, it does seem a lot like other systems we have where it's essentially a class-based structure, isn't it? It's kind of the haves and the have-nots, the privileged and the others. And from what you say, there's no real trickle up from the lower classes into the
no,
professionals.
I would say none.
And no trickle down of money from
no.
from
unlike sport.
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what happens. It yes. trickles up.
Yes.
And trickles up
the talent trickles up.
Well, and yes. the money trickles up because soccer, well, that's how soccer works.
Mm.
Everybody who is on a soccer team pays $200, $300, $400 for the privilege, and that money trickles up.
Yes. Yes, yes. And then gives them the leg up that they
yeah.
need.
So there's poor old Willoughby Theatre Company putting on Mary Poppins and paying $100,000 for the privilege. But the local soccer team, they're only paying a couple of thousand
yeah.
for the use of the sports ground.
Yes.
Which, of course, is supported by rates as well. As well as the, well, heck, they'd make the $2,000 that they pay for the sports ground off the kiosk of the sausage sizzle that day, wouldn't they?
That's right. And you would think that councils in particular would recognise that cultural enterprise like local theatre is a community benefit in exactly the same way as sport.
As Richard Roxburgh said once, where the arts are, life follows.
Yes, that's true, isn't it? Then I asked each of the artists for possible solutions to this conundrum. First, Mark Mordieu.
So a simple thing like to cap rental increases to something a little bit more reasonable than market estimates would be a good thing.
Next we have silkscreen artist Peter Bainbridge reflecting on possible solutions to the artist crisis in Sydney.
We've been looking off and on in Sydney for 6 years for a live work sell thing. And so
like a little gallery space that you can live above. Kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. Mm. It's, and Melbourne's got them everywhere.
Yes.
Sydney got rid of them years ago.
Yeah.
So we're looking for. So I started looking at this concept of the live, work, sell. So the artist lives up the top,
yeah.
produces out the back, and sells out the front.
Somewhere in Oxford Street would probably suit quite nicely if it wasn't $10,000
yeah.
a week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what they want still.
Mm. That's
know.
Right.
We saw,
even though half it's empty.
We saw something the other day that apparently Leichhardt's doing it really tough, but they still want $100,000.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's like, yeah. hello, everyone's yeah. online, guys,
yeah.
you know.
Could you get real?
So I speak to these commercial, guys selling properties for owners and renting them, and they told me how it works. And they said they can't reduce the rent because if they sell it and they've got a lower rent, you know, a renter in there, then the property drops.
The
property value
less.
Drops.
Yes.
You know, and I said, so what are they going to say? You said, the reason why they keep them empty is they've got tax breaks from the government.
Yeah.
That's so right. it's cheaper to keep them empty than rent them out.
That's disgraceful.
And it's only recently that, you know, I think in December, that the Labor government has introduced a tax on the ghost housing for international investors. Only now. Mm. So Australia's got this, you know, absolute strange kind of obsession about housing, and yet there's virtually no rules. For yes. the buyers, sellers, and builders.
That's right. It's like, whatever, just do whatever you like.
Yeah. So the thing is that everyone's got a story about, you know, the horror place that you go to rent, and they've not, you know, I've got an idea to fix this that could fix everything overnight if they had a roadworthy on a house to rent like a car.
Well, folks, that's it. It's a wrap. I've been speaking with Kate Mannix, actor, silkscreen artist Peter Bainbridge, and writer Mark Mordieu about how to survive as a creative in Sydney and what will happen to Sydney if that cannot happen. If you have any great ideas or questions for us, please drop us a line to thesydneyist@eastsidefm.org. We're handing over now to Yon on the vinyl frontier. Thank you for joining us on The Sydneyist.